All right, Jerry Mason, Kicking Lawyer, and we are here for another Law Talk. I'm excited today because finally I have somebody I can talk to, hopefully intelligently. That's on my part, whether it's intelligently on stuff I like. As always, please like, follow, and subscribe to the content. We're available on all podcast platforms, all social media platforms, wherever you listen to your podcast. And obviously, we'd appreciate you give us a follow. And if you haven't, please check out Michelle Allen. She's the go-to realtor in the area if you're going to buy, sell, rent, lease real estate. Michelle Allen will help you out. She's also a good community leader. She's always supporting local events. She's a good contact for people in the area. And if you wanted to learn to kick, punch, and have some self-defense discipline, you can visit masonsmartialarts.com. We've been open for 30 years, celebrating our 34th year anniversary. Two locations, one in Covington, one in Millington. And then Jam Books and Records is another business we have. It's on the square here in town. We have new books, records, signed memorabilia, lots of cool stuff there. So come check us out. And one of the new businesses we're doing is holistic healthcare and hormones. My wife and Dr. Laura are doing that to help you optimize your health. You can visit holistichealthhormones.com for information on that. And last but not least, if you want help with social media marketing, branding, video editing, commercials, etc., visit masonitemarketing.com. So join me today is a gentleman that I met at a speaking engagement I did recently. And I was really interested in talking with him because I think we have some similar interests, Mr. Hal Rounds. And he's also an attorney. And then, are you actively doing any attorney work?
No, in fact, I practiced a very short period of time. But, okay. But I have to say, I when I went to law school...
Well, you told me, though, the one big case you had. But anyway, go ahead.
I was about two-thirds of... the way through my career with FedEx.
Okay.
And I went to law school. I read an article about how Japan was really hurting us in trade back then. And there was a little comment about the person who makes the rules wins the game. And I was thinking, I should do some more education. So I went to law school because I figured the lawyers are making all the rules and they're winning the game.
Yeah, so they have a strategic advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
I got involved in practicing some family law. Mm-hmm. And I did some pro bono work and that sort of thing. And then a fella came to me who had had a girlfriend, and she said, "Oh, you don't need any protection." And so that's how she got her baby. Mm-hmm. And somebody to support it. And we figured that by defrauding her, or her defrauding him, that she'd actually inflicted a fraud case, mm-hmm. and that there were damages. And the damages would be roughly equivalent to the child support. Now, he didn't mind paying the child support because mm-hmm. it was his kid, but there was a damages element to it. Mm-hmm. So we sued her for damages that was approximately equal to the
conveniently
child
equal to
support.
The child support.
Yeah. And the bailiff in the court said, "Well, how long have you been practicing?" And I said, "Well, this is my first actual case on my own." And he said, "Well, you jump in with both feet, don't you?" And somehow or other, after we lost the basic trial, mm-hmm. so I appealed it to the Tennessee, appellate court, mm-hmm. and we had a good time there. They said that your theory is valid, but you haven't proved your elements.
Hmm.
Okay, and that's when we got invited to do what's her name? Lisa Gibbons,
mm-hmm.
and we were invited to her
the
show.
The talk show.
Yeah, and so we got flown to Los Angeles, and my client did his explanation, and I told about how we had, what we had done in the appellate court. And of course, the Supreme Court of the state said, "Well, we don't like either the theory or your facts." So... But I got a friend in California who had seen it, and he had a similar case. And eventually he asked me to recommend him, and he became an attorney in California.
Hmm. So, yeah, that's interesting. Not to get us digress on kind of what we were going to focus on, but I have some unique perspectives on the family law and specifically that type thing where you've got, like, for, and this is not necessarily a popular opinion, I'm not saying it's my opinion, it's just what people don't get on legal argument is sometimes we may even argue things we don't agree with, but it's more the logic of the argument. But men are on the hook for child support, and it's often without their consent, for lack of a better term. I mean, yeah, they're involved, obviously, in the creation of this person, but they don't get to say in the abortion component. Right. And so, again, not to get on a big political thing, but legally, I'm on the hook. Me and this woman get pregnant, or this defendant and woman, or plaintiff and woman gets pregnant, and she doesn't want to have an abortion, but I'm like, well, I do. I want to have an abortion because I don't want to deal with the child, but I have no say in that. However, she can have the kid or have the abortion and not necessarily have say for me, and it affects you either way. But the man is not...
Welcome to equal opportunity.
Yeah. So my point is, it's not a popular argument, but, you know, I guess somewhat sexist, but if you're going to have it equal, I think he should have say, you know, one way or the other. But I told you I do exclusively criminal defense now, but I did family law and dabbled in a little bit of everything. And I hated the family law, man.
Like, I got out of it.
It was so stressful. They're never happy. Nobody's happy no matter what you do. Even if you quote unquote win, it's just so emotion driven. And it just didn't fit my personality profile. You know, the criminal defense to me is much more clean, cut and dry, so I enjoy it. So how did you get into, because I know you speak now on the Constitution and things too, right?
I have always been interested in the Constitution. When I went to law school, I was in my 40s, and I said, I don't want to be corrupted in my morals and my constitutional values. So I wrote down a list of things that I believed. And so from time to time, as I was going through law school, I cross-checked it.
Yeah.
And I was doing okay.
Yeah.
But when I got to the con law course, and I asked some questions about that, specifically about the Second Amendment, which was related to where I met you.
Sure.
They're lying. The law schools and the other colleges are not telling the truth about fundamental elements of our constitutional creation and values. And so I've been, for more than a dozen years, going around giving what I call the Constitution Refresher. It's a full-day course, and you learn all the things that really you should know about how the elements of the Constitution fit together. And there's all kinds of intermingling things in that I don't think most lawyers understand. No offense.
No. I don't disagree with you. And I think, you know, the thing about it with the Constitution, especially the formation of the document, I think people forget these were men. They were human. You know, they were flawed, and I'm really part of what I enjoy about the American Revolutionary period are the personalities. Yeah. Like, these were characters, but they were people, and they had sins, and they did good things, and they did bad things, and they liked each other, and they didn't like each other. And then somehow all that came together to form this document that, you know, now has been the foundation for freedom for a couple hundred years. But then now, fast forward, we still debate why they did this and that, when some of it is outlined. Like, you can see notes from the, you know, was it Jefferson had notes from the Constitutional Convention where they debated it? And I mean, so there's some clear explanation on what the reasoning was for the Second Amendment, for example. How about we do this? How about I tell you my perspective of the Second Amendment, what I think was the root of why they did it, and then you can correct me or tell me what you think's right or wrong on the basis.
Go for it.
I feel like the reason we have a Second Amendment was they wanted protection from the government. They didn't want the government to come into their property, come to their home, their castle, lack of a better term, and tell them, hey, I'm keeping troops here, or hey, I'm taking your stuff, or I'm imposing my will on you without some form of due process. And so the best way to have protection from the government is to have weapons, if you needed to protect yourself from the government. Now, I also think there's a self-defense component against other citizens, you know, to protect your property. But my view is, now, here's the problem where this argument breaks down, and again, I want to hear your input on it. I realize that argument is not valid today because I can't protect myself against a government that has fighter jets and nuclear weapons and missiles, you know what I mean? Like, back in the day when I had a gun.
Don't sell yourself short.
versus a gun. Well, my point is, I don't know that I would agree, and this is a point where we may disagree. I don't know that I would agree today that I'm okay with the general citizen having, you know, armed, you know, like an Air Force. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, that's sort of my evolution of where I feel like the Second Amendment came from.
Okay, let's look at the words.
Okay.
Okay, shall not be infringed. Okay, what's a fringe? It's that little dangly thing at the edge of the fabric.
Yeah.
Right. So they really meant, that's the only place in the Constitution where they mention a fringe of a right. Mm. And the militia makes it not that you're fighting alone against this potentially overreaching government, but you're with your compatriots in the country. Mm-hmm. And that's the role that the guns play as a group. If you have enough people to say, you know what, this thing's out of control, and we've gone past the point where elections are fair, what do we do? Mm. Well, of course, you don't want a war, but that's how we got started.
Sure, sure.
Imagine yourself being one of the people in that generation, and they're coming up to Lexington, and your son-in-law grabs a rifle and joins the rest of the Minutemen, mm-hmm. and he's shooting at his own government. They didn't want that. They wanted to be treated like Englishmen, mm-hmm. with full rights, as same as the ones that they had left in the, you know, origin country. Mm-hmm. The thing is about that whole era, you know, people say that we are a nation of immigrants. I say that's garbage, unless you count everybody who's where they are now, whether it's in the Philippines or anywhere else. The people that are there now displaced people, their ancestors displaced somebody else. They're all immigrants, sure. If we are.
Sure.
Okay, so why did the, British, some people from Britain and then from the other European countries primarily as a beginning, they separated themselves from their countrymen, people that they loved, people that they maybe didn't always, but these people, the people that stayed, were the kind that griped but tolerated it. The people who came here are ones who didn't just gripe. They would get up and do something.
Yeah.
And then you had that sorting. It's like breeding for, corn that has two pieces of corn at a stalk instead of one. You breed this thing, and the people who came from Germany and the people who came from France and the people who came from England, our ancestors separated themselves from their countrymen by being different in that they would not tolerate, mm-hmm. overbearing people telling them what to do. So there's this cultural difference that became a united thing despite the diverse backgrounds. Mm-hmm. They all wouldn't take a bunch of crap.
So you view that as a unified first personality trait despite the difference in the cultures and the background.
Yes.
Josh, you're going to have to turn that air on over there. He keeps the air off when we're in here because it makes noise, but I'm sweating already.
I'm wearing a jacket.
Yeah,
I'm
feel free to take it
I'm
off.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit, though, because I just want to flesh out that argument on the Second Amendment.
Uh-huh.
You're viewing it as if you have a group of people that feel they're being oppressed in some capacity by the government, that group should have a right to rise up, which I agree with, and use force if necessary to control the oppression of the government or overthrow that government, right? And so is your view then that in 2025, if a group of us decided that this is inappropriate, we don't agree with what the government is doing, then we should be able to have tanks and planes and stuff to go in and enforce our rights.
I have a friend who collected tanks. He's grown mm-hmm. out of it. But the idea of this defense is, it's a scary thing. And it even says in the Declaration of Independence that it shall not be done for light and transient causes.
Yeah.
But when you have that list of offenses that the king was perpetrating on you, if the picture's that clear, and if everybody agrees, you know, the majority or however you want to build it, there comes a time when, and sometimes, unfortunately, that's necessary. I don't think we're there now.
Yeah, well, and I don't believe you do, but I'm just, again, trying to flesh out the argument with some counter arguments people make. Like, so two came to mind. One would be the founders, and I'm not saying this is my position, okay? I just want to flesh this out with you.
Go for it.
One would be that the founders didn't anticipate the technological development today. So they were like, Second Amendment back then was muskets and cannons, basically. And now, fast forward, we've got nuclear weapons, you know. So what would be your answer to that, that, you know, the founders intended it for the arms of the day, and then fast forward, they didn't anticipate weapons of mass destruction?
Well, you hit on one of my favorite topics.
Okay, good.
During the Constitutional Convention, one of the most important things in history happened down the street, in the waters, outside Philadelphia, on the Delaware River. A guy named John Fitch demonstrated the first steam-powered anything that moved, in this case, a vessel. Mm-hmm. And some of them went down and watched this thing happen. Something that had been unlike anything that humans had ever seen before. Mm-hmm. Imagine, up until that moment, in the entire history of humanity, everything that had been moved, that other than by sail or river flow, had been done by muscle, whether a man's muscle or a horse's. Everything had been done by something you had to feed and take care of the crap. And now, all of a sudden, you've got something you can turn on by giving it some fuel, and it can propel you somewhere. Mm-hmm. Or you can use that same principle and run a factory. Mm-hmm. And that had never happened in the history of humanity except outside the Constitutional Convention, exactly when they were forming it. Now, do you know who the first president was that saw a man go off into the air and fly away?
I would assume it was around 1900, but I don't know.
it was Washington and Adams and Jefferson and Madison.
Really?
And Monroe, at a demonstration by a Frenchman who came in with a balloon this wasn't a hot air balloon. The ones in France had started off with hot air balloons.
Yeah.
But Blanchard came in, and he had a way of generating hydrogen. And they demonstrated that, and they put it in this balloon vessel, and they soared away in, I think it was 1791, but it was a demonstration in Philadelphia, I believe. And all our first presidents saw that. Now, the very first one, when the balloon was being demonstrated in France, a guy named Benjamin Franklin
was there,
and he saw this thing going up, and a guy asked him, yeah, but of what possible use could it be? And Franklin supposedly turned to this fellow and said, of what possible use is a newborn baby? The foresight that our founders had. You know, Franklin was in the Constitutional Convention. He was the world's authority on lightning and its relationship to electricity. Mm. All these things converged. The foresight that our founders had excelled anybody else in history. And they didn't design it for the technology. They designed it for the way humans relate to each other.
So I guess just to finalize that position, in 2025, you would be okay with a group of citizens that don't agree. Let's use the political spectrum. A group of Democrats that run around with the blue hair and the whole deal, and they got their own views on genders. There's a whole bunch of genders, and they're so pissed that President Trump is trying to make executive orders on defining the genders, and this is an attack on their, you know, their rights. And you think they should be able to have weapons of mass destruction to use against the government that they feel is oppressing them?
Well, yeah, but that also means that we have the right to shoot back.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I agree with you on the formation, and I do agree they had some tremendous foresight. And I think most people just think these are old. I don't know what they think, but I don't think people give them credit, you know, the founding fathers.
That's
they
true.
Were so intelligent and so – they thought through things that even now in 2025, this ancient – it's not even ancient, it's 200 years old. This old document is become like the cornerstone of freedom in the world, and yes. People don't give them enough credit. But I do struggle with – I see your logic.
It's dangerous.
You're right in that we need to have – citizens have to have the – because what else are you going to do? You know, you're going to try to vote on a system that's arguably corrupt anyway, and then how are you going to make significant change without some type of force implement? But I do personally struggle with the general populace having access to, like, nuclear weapons. I struggle with governments having access to nuclear weapons. You know,
When I was in the Air Force – I was a munitions officer, and after my year in Vietnam, I was assigned to a squadron that had nuclear weapons, and I was the guy in charge of that.
Really?
Yeah. So it is scary to have people like me in
charge. Well, I mean, so far, I don't have a problem with you necessarily having it, but yeah. I've met people, especially in my line of work, that I would be concerned, you know,
yes,
if they had
absolutely
those.
In your line of work.
So,
yeah.
But I do agree with you that it's not just militia, that it was not for hunting purposes. My position is the Second Amendment was for general citizens to have arms.
Yeah.
Whatever your argument on what the reasoning for the use of those arms is, I think that you're supposed to, and I agree it's supposed to not be infringed on. So,
well, I'm
pro-constitutional carry.
Part of the problem we have today is what people are being taught by liberals in the educational institutions. The curricula and the textbooks and so on. I have been on the textbook advisory panel in Tennessee. And so that is what you do to scrutinize the textbooks that are proposed for use in the schools at all the different grade levels. And there are twists in there. There are omissions in there that have been, and I believe purposefully, set up to make people think that America is an abusive, overreaching tyranny. And it's so far from true. But that's what the kids are growing up to sense.
Yeah, so just a slight sidebar. When I was in law school, and I went in my mid-30s, but it was a little after when you went to law school. And so it was like 2011, 12, something like that, I was in law school.
Oh, you're just a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. I'm a baby. But my federal courts professor, okay, and look, I went to the University of Memphis Law School.
It's so did I.
Beautiful school.
Yep.
Very liberal. And I try to be neutral. I try to be very moderate down the middle on certain things,
yes.
Right, until I feel an argument moves me one way or the other. But it was clear there was a bias there, and I'll never forget this. Was during the I forget which one of the force encounters it was, but it was the encounter where the cop was in his patrol car and this black male had come over and attacked him and was reaching inside trying to get his gun from him, and he shoots the guy.
Yeah.
And they ended up, oh, it's a huge deal, it's a white cop, black guy,
yeah,
it's a racist thing, when clearly justified use of force. Well, in my opinion, and I'm a use of force expert, but anyway, so the federal court professor comes in. It's a young professor, kind of new to the school. I think it was, matter of fact, her first semester teaching there. Very first question she asked us is, okay, look, and I forget what the basis was why this was in the federal court class, but it was like, look, I know she was talking about that case, and she started by saying, look, I realize none of you would want to defend the officer. But if you did, you know, like, what is kind of the... So her prefaced her question by letting us know her opinion on it. And I was, like, dumbfounded because I was like, well, of course you're going to... He didn't do anything wrong. He's trying to protect his life from this guy trying to take his gun and kill him. and he kills the guy. It's completely legal. Plus, he's a cop. I mean, here's my thing on cops, not to get on my soapbox, because I used to be a cop. But if I'm in uniform and I'm a cop, mm-hmm. and you come to me and attack me, what else am I supposed to think you're doing? You know, that's not normal behavior to just attack a police officer that you know is armed
if
and has
you're
authority
not a cop
to use it.
And somebody attacks you.
But I'm saying, to me, I'm saying it's a whole other level when you know I'm armed.
Right.
You know I'm armed and I can use force to defend myself and you decide to attack me. What else am I supposed to think you're trying to do other than kill me or incapacitate me? And if you incapacitate, if you knock me out, what are you going to do?
Rehabilitative discipline.
Anyway, my point was, in my experience, I enjoyed the school. I made some good friends. There was one professor, as a matter of fact, super Democrat. Her husband is still the mayor. Lee Harris, his wife, or the Shelby County mayor was. Lee Harris in Shelby County, his wife, Alana Allen, was my professor in like three or four different courses. I loved her.
Yeah.
And we had completely polar opposite views on things, but she would let me talk, and then we would kind of like now there's a discourse between us. It was very respectful. I learned a lot from her. But my point is, I did detect a strong left-leaning bias in law school when I went. So I'm not surprised to hear you say what you said about...
Now, I was born and raised in California.
That's even worse.
And in the late 60s, I already noticed it myself there. Okay, now there is a poem. So leap for joy, be blithe and gay, or weep my friends with sorrow. For what California is today, the rest will be tomorrow.
There's some truth to that. It spreads. You're right. Yeah.
I didn't invent that. That was somebody else.
I'm going to California Friday. My son is stationed in Coronado, San Diego.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I'm flying. My wife and I are flying Friday to go visit him because they're back. He was deployed for like 6 months. So. San Diego is kind of a red island, though. It's a little different than the rest of the state.
And if you're away from the coast, the state's pretty red.
Mm. Unfortunately, those are the population centers there along the way.
It's where it's pretty.
Yeah. So not to digress on the – because, I could talk – I wish Josh had given us a couple of hours to talk. I'm supposed to have an appointment at 2, but we may push them back because I was really looking forward to talking with you.
Good.
So part of why is, as I mentioned to you, what spawned my interest in the American Revolution was I started really – when I got into law school, got into studying constitutional law, trying to understand our rights, et cetera, especially as they relate to criminal defense and law enforcement's enforcement powers. Anyway, so all that was very interesting. So then I got to studying the people, and I had heard the name George Mason, but I didn't know I was related to George Mason.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, so I started coming to similar conclusions about the Constitution and then started looking at this guy who had these objections to the Constitution, and I was like, well, I agree with that. And then I got to look at it, and next thing I know, we're related.
Bing!
And I came to the similar conclusions that he did. Like, for example, I think the executive branch is overpowered. Like, I really do. I don't like the administrative wing of the government. I think delegating those authorities is a problem. Clearly, Trump agrees, I think, with that.
Yeah.
Struggled with that. I also didn't understand why. I understand a little more now because it was sort of a compromise. But I was like, why didn't they address slavery? Most of them were against it. You know, like they weren't all pro. They just couldn't figure a workaround in their economics. So, you know, they kind of compromised to leave it in there. And then a lot of them thought that the bill. I was like, why isn't there a Bill of Rights? That's what one of the reasons he didn't sign. George Mason.
Yes.
And I guess to be clear, because he knows this, but you guys may not. So George Mason is one of, it was three, right? It was two or three that refused to sign the Constitution. And he had reasons why. He had these objections. And
so did the rest. They were in agreement.
The other two?
The others, yeah.
Yeah, that refused to sign it. I want to say Randolph was one of them. That may be wrong. I forget the other ones that didn't sign.
I'm terrible at names.
Yeah, well.
Yes.
So they had the Constitutional Convention. He was instrumental there. He spoke more than anybody else. If you look at the notes, a lot of them turned to him as a legal scholar. Like, he was a very prominent member of the Constitutional Convention. And then he was friends with George Washington. There's an argument on how close, but there is an argument they were like best friends. He was 10 years older than Washington. They were right on the Potomac together. Their properties butted up against each other in Virginia. And he ended up losing the friendship because of his refusal to sign the Constitution. And anyway, so I'm saying all this because he had specific objections that – let's start with the top three. So one of them was there's no Bill of Rights. So what is your view on why they didn't have Bill of Rights initially in the Constitution?
Because one of the key elements in building the Constitution in the first place was that you would give a list of powers. Now, there's a fundamental legal process in that. Expressio unius est exclusio alterius, which is Latin for if you got something in a list, then things that aren't in the list aren't treated that way. I like to use it as the toy box theory. Mm-hmm. If you've got a bunch of toys here and you tell Johnny you can play with the Lincoln Logs and the Tigger and a short list, then your child has the authority to do the Lincoln Logs and the Tigger, right? Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of other toys in that toy box. You haven't named them as what you're
so
giving permission for.
So they're unenumerated.
Unenumerated,
but still,
precisely.
Still understood.
But still, it is by omission specifically excluded. And if you look at the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8, that's your toy box. Mm. Everything else that has been done, Department of Education, Environmental Protection, all these invented authorities are in violation of the Constitution. Mm. The Constitution, and by delegating these powers from Congress, which is the sole lawmaking authority, mm-hmm. to the president, and then giving him a bunch of independent agencies, mm-hmm. you have
a bunch of NGOs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've created this monster that now has to be fed or eliminated.
Yes, and I agree with you. I think it should be eliminated. I agree with you. They are overstepping on the constitutional powers. it's just rampant and run unchecked now. I was excited because I thought Musk was going to put some of it in check, through Trump, and then they, of course, had the falling out.
Yeah.
And now you don't hear anything about what is going on. But there's so much government waste through this administrative wing of all this stuff that's going on.
It's not just waste. It's infliction of things that are wrong.
Sure.
The Department of Education has no authority to make rules for schools. But, and Monroe started this, if you sponsor something for a state to operate, you're giving the state the authority and they have the authority to do it. Mm. But you only give them the money if they follow
that's,
the rules.
That's what people don't get. That's where the power comes in, is pulling
yes,
those purse strings.
That is right.
Now, Trump realizes that, and he yeah. realized that even in the, which I was excited about his foreign policy. I think so many people, especially on the left, focus on Trump's idiosyncrasies as a person that
yeah,
I can
right.
see can be off-putting. That's right.
He's not a good speaker. I mean, he's actually very exciting.
He's a good speaker, but he's not. He's more like a comedian, timing-wise. That he reads the room and plays to the room and then says whatever.
Yeah.
He's not
like Reagan.
No, you're right. It's definitely different. It's not like Clinton or Obama or any of them that are sort of traditional. But my point is, like, I think people focus so much on him as a person, and they're missing the things that he's doing that are actually good for the country on the grand, on the big scale. And I knew, because I, to some degree, understand the Constitution, a lot of the executive branch's power that's not quite, that's not regulated, or they don't have any ability to regulate, is his foreign power, his ability to negotiate treaties and things and do these tariffs and all these things he's doing on the foreign powers. So I feel like what Trump's doing on that end is very legal and kind of more what the president is supposed to be doing.
Well, yes and no. The treaties, for instance, he has the authority to negotiate them, but it has to be approved by...
ratified by Congress.
And it's interesting, it's not just Congress, it's the Senate. Mm. And why is it the Senate and not the House? Because the Senate was originally configured to represent the states, not the people. Mm-hmm. And the states have to deal with whatever is negotiated in treaties.
Yeah, your Senate was more your aristocrat society class, and then the I viewed it as the Senate was like the trained, I don't want to say intelligent because they're not, but they're more schooled, and then your general citizen was the House.
That was expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like to say something about the records we have of the Constitutional Convention and mm-hmm. other things going on then. You know, without recorders, how did they get every word? Mm-hmm. They had a way. It's called shorthand. Mm-hmm. You can do everything with shorthand. Some people just have no concept of how things were done mm-hmm. in that era before we have cell phones.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing, though, they could focus a lot better because they didn't have cell phones.
Exactly.
They could stay there and listen. They were focused. Although, you know, again, I go on to the people, like, when they were in that, I forget the name of the place where they were meeting in Philadelphia for the Constitutional Convention. Convention Hall. Yeah, yeah. Freedom Hall or Liberty, whatever it is now. But it was hot.
Yeah.
Talk about how hot it was. It's not like now where I was just saying it's hot and here he turns the AC on. They were having to sit there and focus and stay, and it was hot. And they would sometimes even miss because, you know, somebody's gout's acting up or whatever was going on. And it's like one of my favorite stories, and I forget which book I read this in, but it was talking about how they were voting to secede. And I think it was Rhode Island. It was one of the smaller colonies that they needed their vote to officially secede. And there were like three delegates. One of them was for it and one of them was against it. And then one of them hadn't come because he was dying. He was like on his deathbed. And then the legend is they adjourned that day, and I forget who it was sent the message to him that this other guy was going to vote against it and they weren't going to be able to succeed. And he got off his deathbed, rode all night through a storm, and like the next day he come busting up in the hall and he's like, I vote to leave, you know.
This is for the Declaration of Independence. But
yeah, I think this was to secede from Britain.
Yeah,
I said secede, not secede.
Well, it was the same thing. It was seceding.
It was a civil war. Yeah. No. But anyway, just think about that. About if that guy hadn't gone and done that, they didn't give him the message. He didn't get there in time. Then it might have never happened, or at least not at that time. You know, it's just so many things that were human related that people don't realize occurred, or even names that are lost in history to some degree that people don't even realize were vital to the formation of the nation.
Absolutely.
So did you have any position or knowledge on George Mason, like any view on him as a contributor?
Your ancestor was quite a good guy.
Well, thanks. Yeah. So he was a heavier set than me, or at least the pictures of him are. But I do look like him. Like if you get pictures and side
these
by
things
side,
are genetic.
Yeah. Even the way we think.
So is sex.
Oh, for the better or for the worst?
well, for the better. But there are three sexual pronouns.
Okay.
He and such related, she and such related, and it.
Uh huh.
That's it. For animate objects, uh-huh. it's a he and a she. That's it.
I don't disagree with you.
I know.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get it in.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm probably a little more progressive on some of that than you, in that, let me just digress.
Sure.
Let's say we have a trans person, okay?
Okay.
A biological male who now identifies as a female and wants to dress like a woman and be called a she and all that stuff, right? I'm very supportive of his right to think that way, act that way, whatever he wants to do. But where I draw the line is when he's trying to impose his view on me. I'm not going to call you a woman. You're a dude. You know, like, I'm not going to, I don't want you around my children preaching them, telling them something that I don't agree with. No more than I think we should have Christianity in schools. I think the school is separation of church and state. I don't think you should have.
They should know what it is.
Well, I think that's up to...
And the other religions as well.
I think that is up to the parents. I don't want the school to...
That's the best place.
To teach my kids one way or the other. I'm going to leave that up to the parents. So, but anyway...
Now with the dude and his...
Is that his dog right outside the door?
Hmm?
You open that door. Perry! Perry! Did he come? Perry! He might be in my office with the door closed.
There's a door there straight across that is closed?
No, this one right here. If you don't mind opening that one, let me see if that's him. Because he'll keep barking, and then that's all we're going to be listening to. Sorry, Josh. Perry. There he is. Yeah, he just wants to come hang out with us. Here, come here, Perry. Come here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Now we got him.
Okay.
He's over there scared. He thought we left him. Anyway, sorry about that.
All right, now about the guy.
Yeah, about the guy.
In 1,000 years, mm-hmm. when some archaeologist digs him up and they find a little bit of DNA they can test, mm-hmm. what sex is that going to show?
He's a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. My thing is, like, I try to be a libertarian, typically.
I was chair of the Libertarian Party in Shelby County for okay. a year. Yeah.
And let me explain how I tell people what a libertarian is. I want the Democrats to stay out of my pocket, and I want the Republicans to stay out of my bedroom.
Yep.
And you do you, I'm going to do me. I don't want you imposing your stuff on me, you know. And so I'm more conservative in a lot of my views, but I'm open to people expressing their own views however they want. I just don't want it imposed on me, if that makes sense.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah. Back though to the American Revolutionary period there, because we're coming a little progressive, and we can debate what they would think about that kind of stuff too. So I've been studying Franklin and Lafayette a lot okay. recently. And Franklin's a really interesting cat. I don't know if people realize how instrumental he was, because, you know, there's an argument if it wasn't for Franklin in France, there might not be a United States, you know, a very instrumental.
He got some things done.
Yeah. And then Lafayette even, you know, mm-hmm. that was so young. I didn't realize till I got to study. I'm reading a book on Lafayette right now, and I didn't realize how young he was when he came over here and fought. And then he was injured, and then they turned him into like a superhero over there, and then that helped motivate, I think, push the king into the French king into helping us out.
And there was an animosity going on with England at the time as well.
Oh, sure, they leveraged all they and they were great at propaganda, at selling it, like Franklin yeah. especially.
Yes.
So, but I say that because I'm just so into all these characters. Do you have a favorite founding father? Is there like someone that you're like, oh? You either identify with ideologically, or you just think, man, that's unique. I really enjoy reading about him.
It's really difficult because there was, I think, a miraculous combination of people. But when you put it all together and make it work, that's Washington.
So let me ask you this then, and you can tell me why you feel that way on Washington. Do you think he wanted to be president? Do you think he wanted to be the head of the army? To start with that. Do you think he wanted to be the...
Well, he was the only guy that came to the meetings in uniform.
I know. Yeah, no, but you read all the readings and they act like, you know, he's so above reproach and he was humble. But he showed up in a military uniform when they're voting on who's going to be the general.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so tell me why Washington then. Why is he pre-med?
Well, what kind of amazing skill did it take, one... to keep all those people in the convention together, mm-hmm. you know, working toward at least a similar goal.
Mm-hmm. And he was president of the Constitutional Convention.
He was. Yeah. And then unanimously elected, but there wasn't really a people election.
Sure.
He's given, all right, here's a book, here's an authority, make it work. Mm-hmm. What kind of person can do that? I mean, with a whole nation.
He was definitely an impressive person and must have been super charismatic. One of the things that I always find interesting is if you read the correspondence of the other wives talking about Washington, like was it Abigail Adams, John mm-hmm. Adams' wife?
Yeah.
She wrote one letter that's like almost scandalous, talking about how gorgeous he was and how, like, you know, like he made an impression on people when he came in. But like even the women were like, oh, this guy, you know, when he shows
up. Okay, like 3 weeks ago, my wife and I were coming back from Maine where we went sailing. And we stopped at the Smithsonian. Mm. And she had to go look at Washington's uniform.
Mm-hmm.
He was big.
Yeah, he was tall for the day. And he's tall nowadays. I think he was like 6'2", 6'3", right?
Yeah, and, yeah. you know, it was kind of a grand, just the way he was dressed.
Sure.
Yeah, so he was impressive.
This is a part I guess I understand, but I also kind of struggle with. I don't know that he was the greatest military mind, though, because if you look prior to the American Revolution, he just got his rear end handed to him in most battles when he was a British soldier. And then even the American Revolution, what he was good at, I don't know if he realized it at the time, we do now, and I'm curious if there's any evidence in historical documents showing that he did. But, you know, I think the key was he had to not lose. It wasn't I need to beat the British. He needed a battle of attrition and keep the army together long enough to not lose.
I buy that entirely. And I don't know if he would ever have won if it hadn't been for a couple of battles late in the war in the South.
Yeah.
One of which was King's Mountain, mm-hmm. which I had two relatives in.
Really? Which yeah. side? British or American?
Oh, goodness sakes. Give me a break. They were over the mountain, man.
Okay.
And they didn't know each other until my mom and dad met when their two lines came together.
And then they realized they were in the same battle. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had, I don't know if Josh knows this, but we've had somebody in all the American skirmishes and even back in some of the British. Because thanks to the George Mason connection, we can trace it.
In the Crusades.
Yeah, we can trace it like all the way back. Uh-huh. You know, and of course, uh-huh. you go far enough, you're related to everybody. But we related to one of the queens back then, and it's you know.
Oh really?
Oh okay. Yeah. Even what did I tell you the Viking's name was? Rollo.
Rollo
the Viking. It was as a descendant of ours.
You mean an ancestor?
Ancestor. You're right. Not a descendant. You're right. It's an ancestor. We're his descendant. Distantly, obviously, but. Yeah, it goes way back because George Mason's line is very easy to trace once you connect
sure,
the dots there.
Sure.
And it's funny because I did Ancestry.com, which is actually pretty interesting. I even did the DNA testing. So they sequence it and show you, connect you to people. But you literally see a straight line. It's like England, Wales. There's a little bit of Scandinavian activity, and it's like shows our migration and the time periods and who we're related to.
Right.
Then it's Virginia, and then it spreads across and gets to Tennessee, and you can literally see the migration of our ancestors. So it's pretty interesting.
I've done a bunch of that, and it's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. We're probably related down the road, Mr. Howe.
Well, perhaps.
Yeah.
But
what do you think about this then? Another point on George Mason's objections. And I kind of think I know the answer to this, but I'm curious to hear your perspective. So he said they didn't address slavery. So why do you think they didn't address slavery in the Constitution?
Well, they did. Okay. But what they had to do in order to get everything together is they had to provide for – they couldn't eliminate it immediately, but they found a way to strangle it.
Mm.
And that way was the – prohibition after 20 years of importing any slaves. All right. They didn't use the word slaves, but they did something way back in, 8 years earlier, a slave trade bill that said no American, no U.S. citizen could operate a ship, own a ship, sail a ship that did bring slaves to any place except the slave states that existed. Mm-hmm. If somebody took a slave from Puerto Rico and brought it into the U.S. or sent it to St. Thomas, confiscate the ship, put the guy in jail. So the slave trade that was legal that Americans were involved in from 1794 on was limited to this one route.
Mm.
And that slowly put crimps on it so that fewer and fewer people were dependent on having a slave thing. What ruined it was invention of the cotton gin, where you suddenly had, you could process endless amounts of cotton. How are you going to grow it? You didn't have machines for doing that yet.
Yeah. Well, and I think so much of the economy was based on agriculture, which at the time was, like you said, they didn't have mechanical means. So it was manual labor. And the cost of the manual labor, if it wasn't slave labor, the economy wasn't set up for it. So, I mean, I understand the economic pressures they had on trying to figure that out. And why, again, the southern states were more affected by it. My position is, it was an unfortunate compromise, but at the time, if they hadn't have come to some compromise, then there wouldn't have been a nation.
We'd have been speaking British.
Exactly. And then you sort of touched on another objection he had was the executive. You know, his view was, at the time, it was really the country was really coastal. You didn't really have tons out. So He wanted a northern executive representative, a middle executive representative, and a southern. So three presidents. And they wanted them to be able to come to compromise together on the interests of the whole. And that's an interesting take on it, instead of having a single president.
Well, and that's difficult, too, because, excuse me, once you have a law, you need one executive to implement it. Mm-hmm. And since the executive branch had no authority to create a law, you had to rely on that diversity of potential views to be in Congress. Mm-hmm. And Congress split into two houses. But once you came to the part where it had to be implemented, you can't have one person saying, I think we should have attack by sea, or and the other guy, no, it needs to be a land operation.
You need somebody to be more decisive, is what you're saying. Yeah, especially in times of war. I could see that. And so I don't necessarily agree it should have been three presidents.
Okay. Let me just add a touch of that. You know, that the original plan was that the vice president would be the runner-up in the presidential election.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine Trump-Hillary?
Yeah. And, you know, people act like that's funny, but I'm sure it was just as they were just as split back then, when you would have two opposing parties running against each other. John Adams, you know, famously said that it was the, what do you say, it was the least important position in government or something like that. He's an interesting cat, too. I studied a lot on him. Just the fact that as a lawyer, I respect the fact, I was trying to explain to people, he defended the British soldiers in the Boston Massacre.
Yes.
And it would have been like a modern-day attorney defending, like, the 9/11 terrorist or something. Like, these guys were hated. You know, they were pissed at them.
Yeah.
Like, they're infiltrating the government. You know, and I'm sure it's not like today where you can look up stuff and Google it and watch a video. I'm sure the rumor mill spread throughout Boston, and they were wanting to hang these guys. And then he not only defended them, he got a couple of them were not guilty. I think almost all of them.
They were all acquitted.
Yeah, all acquitted because of him. And nobody because else would step up and do it.
Not just because of him, but because the evidence and the commitment to impartiality of the jury.
Yeah, but still.
That was.
I agree, but you got to have a lawyer that's willing to bring that up and you know, basically challenge the jury to actually hold the government to the burden.
Yep.
And that's just. And then the fact, you know I've caught heat representing certain people nowadays on various cases I've had locally. And so I can only imagine, and then fast forward for him to become, you know, a famous founding father and second president of the nation is pretty impressive. He was an impressive guy, too. They're just also interesting to get to talk about those guys. And I agree with you, it's virtually miraculous that many unique minds could come together to create the nation that we have.
Providence.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. One thing to circle back to, you just mentioned talking about the president and being decisive. What is your take on the legality of him pulling the cops in D.C. and trying to use them? Because he's got that federal presence right now in D.C.
Well,
and I ask because I honestly don't know what his authority is, if he can pull. My understanding is D.C., because it's a federal district, it's under his power. So I was confused on why there was a problem there. But they were talking because he's pulling the D.C. regulars, you know, the cops. Can he do that? Am I misunderstanding it?
I do not know the specifics of the statute, but the District of Columbia was separated from any other state in order for the home of the federal government not to have to be obedient to some state's interests over it. And what that created was a federal district. And initially, the people there did not have representation in Congress or in the presidential election. And I don't think they should. The idea of D.C. then getting a democratically elected mayor and a separate police force and all that is a creation that I'm not sure is consistent with the basic design in the Constitution of a federal safe haven.
Yeah.
And it falls under the executive, the lawmaking authority of the person who's the executive of the federal government, which is the president. Now, again, I don't know all the rules that have been, you know, promulgated, but I think he's doing the right thing. Now, I have a little more problem with him doing it in Los Angeles.
Because it's clearly a sovereign state.
Yes. But if it is there to protect federal agents that are not being protected by the local law enforcement, there's a little grip on some justification there.
Yeah, I definitely, you and I probably agree on this. I think, though, at this point, the federal government is immensely more powerful and larger than it was ever intended to be.
Amen.
Now, I do agree it needed more power than the Confederation had initially. You know, I think it needs to be, it needs some legs, but it's way overpowered right now compared to where it should have been. Again, circle back to why I was so excited when they were going to cut a lot of this stuff. It looked like, you know, some of the bureaucratic departments were going to be cut. Now I don't know where that's going to go.
Well, I like to use FEMA as an example. Mm-hmm. Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is primarily responsive to weather and that sort of damages that are shared among states. Mm-hmm. It's not listed among the powers. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the states cannot contract with each other to set up a mutual agency that has that kind of an authority amongst them with permission of Congress. Okay, so then you don't have the federal government doing that, but that the necessity is addressed at a different level.
Yeah, because again, it's not an enumerated power of the Constitution. And therefore, if it's not enumerated, it's left to the states. You know, I was just discussing
10th Amendment.
I was just discussing this with my law partner this weekend because, you know, they're supposedly revisiting gay marriage in the Supreme Court, potentially. We may revisit it. And his position is, well, it should have been left to the states. Like, you know, people get upset that Congress won't step in. And then I was like, well, I don't know. You know, is right to marry a fundamental right? I don't know. What do you think?
But we're tinkering with a word that has, through history, a solid, socially necessary, defined meaning. One man, one woman for life. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you say, well, let's expand it to this and that. Okay, if you want to have homosexuals get together in some similar pattern, it's not one man and one woman. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not saying they can't do whatever kind of contract between
you
themselves.
You just said a civil union.
Yeah, a civil union, but don't take away the uniqueness of the word we have to have. Because if you're tinkering with the vocabulary, what are you going to do with the word jurisdiction?
Well, my position on the gay marriage thing is, I don't really care. As long as it's not infringing on my view or my children or me, if you're an adult of legal age and you're a guy and you want to marry a guy, I think you should be just as miserable as the rest of us. And let
well,
them do it.
that process, yeah. I agree. The wording of it, if you...
You just don't want to use the word marriage.
Because then marriage loses its specificity, and you need that.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a hill I'm willing to die on. I think that what you call it to me is not as relevant. I think as long as they're of legal age, because, for instance, you say it's a man and a woman, and then some people are going to argue, well, it's the 13-year-old needs to be able to marry a 47-year-old. You know what I mean? And I don't agree with that. So I think you got to put certain requirements in there, and to me it's more if you're of legal age and this is what you want to do, I personally don't care if you do it or not. I do agree it's a state's rights issue.
It's a state's issue.
Yeah, I think the states have the right to define marriage as they want. I say I agree. At the same time, I think there's an argument that marriage is a fundamental right, maybe. It's unenumerated, but maybe the right to marriage is part of the pursuit of happiness.
It's an extra legal right.
Yeah. So, but you know, here's side thing. You'll find this interesting. And I'll probably get canceled for saying this. Josh will make it a TikTok. It'll be great. But there's some studies that came out recently on divorce rates. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The number one couple type that has the highest divorce rate in the United States are lesbians.
I saw this.
Two women. This is number two with the highest, next highest divorce rate are heterosexual men and women. And then the one with the lowest divorce rate are gay guys. So what's the defining difference? Well, you got two women, then you got one woman, and then you got no women. And when the guys are together, the guys stay together, right? Because there's no women involved. I thought it was funny. I know you don't like it. Don't get it.
I know of some couples of different combinations.
Yeah.
And the guys are just more solid.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just no drama. It's less drama. No, it's a joke. Everybody's going to hate me for saying anything about that, but it's just a joke about marriage. It's funny.
Yeah, well, we're both in trouble. So.
Yeah, either way, I'm going to be in trouble. Well, Mr. Howe, we're coming up on our hour here, and I really wanted to, like I said, I don't know if Josh realized how interested I am in the American Revolutionary period, because I'd love to have a couple of hours to dive into some of the stuff we didn't cover.
And I've got a lot more.
I'm interested in the Civil War too, but my main focus, I'll show you in a second in my office, you'll even see behind it, like I'm working on maybe writing a book on George Mason, because I thought it would be cool to do an analysis of his objections to the Constitution, and then today, are they valid? You know, yes. Like do a comparison between the two and do a deep dive into his arguments and how things have evolved to today. I'm just really interested in him. I've got every book written on George Mason ever that I can find.
Okay, just a little plug for me.
Sure,
I go around and I teach the Constitution.
Yes, sir.
And I have what I call the Constitution Refresher, which is a 6-hour presentation on these different things that partly we've been discussing.
Sure.
And I like to go do that for civic groups.
Okay.
So if anybody's interested out there, they can get a hold of you and get a hold of me. And I don't charge for it. I do if I have to drive a long distance. I like to be compensated for that. But I've been doing that for shortly after I got out of law school.
Well, the next time you do one, let me know, because I'd love to attend.
Well, if you want to organize one for me, I'd love to do that.
I could do that. I even have contacts here with our local museum, and she'd probably love to have you a part of it there. It'd be great. Because I'm super into it, and I'll take notes, because I'm the type that'll want to like ask questions the whole time.
Well, it's a PowerPoint.
Oh, okay.
It's lots of illustrations, and I have a couple of really old documents.
Yes, sir. Nice. Well, again, I appreciate your time, and I would like to have you on in the future, and I'll make sure Josh blocks us more time so that we can spend a little more time diving into
it. It's been fun.
Yeah, I've enjoyed having you, Mr. Howe. Like I said, I knew you and I would hit it off on certain stuff. Next time, we'll have to get you here, we'll eat lunch, and then we can go do something after. And take Perry. And you are of an age where you probably do get the Perry Mason reference.
And that's funny, because last night I was thinking about, they showed a picture of Perry Mason flashing through on the screen. I was thinking, I wonder how many people nowadays know who Perry Mason is.
It's a good question. So I thought it was hilarious, because I'm Jerry Mason, he's Perry Mason, I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
And but what's funny, if they're like 31, 32 or younger, they don't know who Perry Mason is.
Yeah.
They don't. They reference a cartoon platypus named Perry the Platypus.
Oh.
When I say Perry, that's what they think of. There's very few 30 or under that know who Perry Mason the lawyer was.
Well, schools are not teaching about how things used to be.
That's true. Although, I have read the original Earl Stanley Gardner. I'm on book 21 of the Perry Mason.
I've read most of them.
And, you know, they're super racist and super sexist, so I don't know that they would fly well today. But they're good. I mean, they're good little mystery novels.
And what one of the things I do like to point out on that is there is one of the cases that Perry is doing where he is very interested in getting across Los Angeles as quickly as he can, and he times his drive to match the red light or green light sequence down this avenue, because even back in the 50s, they coordinated street lights so you could flow.
Mm.
Without a computer.
He does a lot of interesting things, especially in the early ones. Like they have fingerprints, but they don't really have DNA yet or hair or anything. But it's very interesting the way those. I've even taken a few of his trial tactics from the novels and used them in actual practice. Yeah. You got to be careful, though, because Perry Mason likes to mess with the evidence and do some shady stuff. But anyway.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Hal Round, thank you for being here. And if anybody wants contact with him, just message us, and we'll get you set up to do, like he said, his constitutional
refresher
seminars. And I'll try to get one set up here and keep people posted on that. Please like, follow, subscribe to the content. And as I mentioned, if you're going to buy, sell, rent, lease real estate in the area, Michelle Allen's your go-to. She'd be glad to help you out. If you're looking to move into the area, commercial property, residential property, she'll be glad to help you out. If you want to learn to kick and punch and have some self-control, you can visit masonsmartialarts.com. We've been open since 1993. Two locations, one in Millington, one in Covington. And then if you want to buy some records, I just bought a 1,500 and another collection, 500 records that's in the store now. So come check us out on the square in Covington, Jam Books and Records. And then if you want to optimize your health, you visit holistichealthhormones.com. That's my wife and Dr. Laura's clinic. They'd be glad to help you out, optimize your health. And as I mentioned, if you want help with commercial, social media, marketing, branding, etc., just visit masonitemarketing.com. And again, I thank Mr. Howell for being with us. I thank you guys for watching us. Hope you have a good rest of your week. Keep kicking. Thanks for watching, guys. Just remember that this is not legal advice or investment advice or business advice. This is for fun and entertainment purposes only.